Oh, good morning, friends. Or maybe we're not friends anymore. How's the retreat going? So sometimes, you know, we say on the first day, like the first day is the hardest day. Sometimes the second day is the hardest day. Sometimes it's the third day. Could be today. Today is the hardest day. But there is something that happens as we settle into, into listening a little bit more deeply, because, you know, the tendency is if we do hit something difficult in our kind of daily lives, it's so easy to find an escape route that is a generous act, you know, for our heart and mind. It's compassionate to find a way out of a moment of difficulty or something that feels hard or we're not sure. You know, my turn, you know, to a friend or to a favorite Netflix thing or something to eat or just anything is better than sitting here watching, you know, the truth of things. And there's something that is really powerful and courageous in this willingness to stay with our experiences. And that's why we say sometimes as we settle in, it does feel, you know, at times that things are becoming more difficult, and it can even feel like we're going backwards, like we were fine before we came on retreat. And clearly the retreats are the deepest cause of suffering. That's why we come here, is to actually discover the noble truth of suffering. This is where suffering really exists. But it's not, right? It's just that we have a chance to feel and to notice and not distract ourselves. And so the other teachers were encouraging me to speak a little bit about the hindrances just before coming in here. So I just want to kind of name them again. Kara mentioned them last night, and she talked about one of the five hindrances, doubt, in a lot of detail. And so again, the other ones, the hindrances are the hindrances of sensual desire. So the desiring for the sense experiences, things to see or hear, or smell, taste, and body. So desiring, grasping after that. And then aversion. How is this? Could you all hear the scratching as well? Sousa has supersonic hearing, by the way, because she does. When we were together, we used to be partners, and there was a question about my hearing, and there was apparently sounds that I was not picking up in the room, and so we went to go get tested, and they're like, no, your hearing's just fine. So they put her in the booth testing, and it was like off the charts hearing things that I didn't hear. But it made me look bad, but this is the problem, right? Other people can be amazing, and you look terrible. So this is what happens on retreat too, right? Everyone looks amazing because they're sitting quietly and looks so peaceful, right? And we're the only ones that have a mind that thinks and wanders and loses awareness. We're the only one, or has doubt, I'm not good enough. So these hindrances, sensual desire, aversion to what's happening is a second hindrance, sloth and torpor, right? Just that tendency to not have energy putting in, restlessness and worry, the fourth hindrance, and then doubt. So it's easy to hear these hindrances and feel as if they are bad, as if they are wrong. And the reason why they're called hindrances is that they, when they are not seen as part of how we are practicing, right, how we are observing, if they are there in our observing mind, So we're watching with craving, we're watching with aversion, or we are practicing and there's doubt, but we don't know that the mind is in a constant loop of doubting, I can't do this, this is not working, I'm not getting anywhere, right? Or we feel really agitated and we feel that that's a problem. So when these energies are playing out and they're unnoticed, they hinder our ability to see things just as they are. We cannot see that what is arising is also passing away. It's hard to see that things are changing. It's hard to see that whatever is arising in the experience, even the hindrance itself, is not self. It is a conditioned phenomenon. It's a part of this world, right? This realm that we're in. When conditions come together, and the moment of experience that we're having feels like this, right? This is the result. And that's why we call it nature. Just as the natural world outside has its own processes, we might like a sunny day better than we do a cold, damp, gray day, but they are both equally arising out of conditions. Right? When we see the outside world, and this is why nature, as Kara was saying, is such a kind of teacher, it's because we begin to relate to this body and mind also as nature. But that's difficult because our entire life, all of the conditioning, has been to own and possess everything that happens in our body and mind. Everything we experience, we tend to relate to it as mine. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? There's nothing wrong with owning it, meaning it's not bad. It's just that if we look carefully, that owning and possessing is not accurate. It is just conditions. And the result of clinging and grasping after what is arising in the heart and mind is that when it's pleasant, we want more of it, and we think of it as good. And when it's unpleasant, the more that we identify with it, the more we want to get rid of it. And we think of it as bad. So this is why we talk a lot about right view. Right view, wise view, the Buddha put it right at the beginning of the Noble Eightfold Path. The first path factor of the eight steps, right view, wise intention, speech, action, livelihood, and then effort, mindfulness, and stability of mind. So these eight path factors, wise view is right in the beginning, because we need to be able to look at experiences with some kind of wise orientation to begin to understand the nature of it. Right? So if we look at it through a distorted lens, we're not going to be able to really understand it. And this is what wise view allows us to do, is to see and open to things just as they are. Okay, so again, hindrances, they arise naturally. They don't belong to us. Right? They're universal. And just to maybe demonstrate that for a moment, have any of you had a hindrance yet when you heard those five hindrances? Just curious. And mostly if you don't raise your hand, it means you're not very good, like, meditator. No, I'm joking. It's just these are energies. They're natural energies. So the more that we're aware, the more we'll see them, right? So we don't have to be afraid of them. And actually, they too can yield insights. That's why it doesn't really matter what's happening. It really doesn't matter what we're paying attention to. The more that we understand the nature of Dhamma, whether it is an object like the breath or the body or a thought, or it's a state of mind, a mental state, like a hindrance, or it could be something that's beautiful, compassion, the state of equanimity, even becoming aware of mindfulness, of awareness itself, right? That's also a quality of mind. So whatever is arising in the present moment can become a source for another moment of awareness, for softening the heart, to opening to the way it is, and ultimately to understanding, to seeing that it's changing, it's just arising out of conditions, nothing to grasp or hold on to, whatever it is. Right? Even doubt, when we start to be able to step back and observe, that's why it's important not to get so kind of caught into what is the thing we're paying attention to, because we might miss other things that are happening, the general mood that we're in. Right? So like doubt can be like a mood. Aversion can be a mood. Exuberance also. If we're not aware of that kind of exuberance, then when the exuberance goes away and we've been left kind of grasping after that amazing state, then we'll be left a little deflated. I think it was Steve Armstrong who used to teach this retreat as well, and I think it was from him. He had this phrase, he'd say that there's nothing like a good sitting to ruin the rest of the retreat or the next few years of sittings, right? Because if you have an amazing sitting, what does the mind do? If you're not actually observing the grasping, what we call amazing is it was amazing, it was so pleasant, which is beautiful. But the grasping, what happens if we don't notice that? And then you can spend years trying to get back. It's like, well, let's see, well, it was on May 5th I had that amazing sit, so I'll just go on retreats. Maybe it's because it's in May, or it was a sunny day, so I have to wait for that moment when it's sunny and the light hits me in just the right way. I mean, literally, we can try and get into those sorts of, what was exactly happening? Which is just, some conditions came together. And then, maybe we missed the grasping. So that's why we're encouraging not to get so leaning into the object that we miss what else is there, right? And we can know a lot. What else is there if we allow that sense of the awareness slowly to receive more, right? To mature over time. Okay, so we can go ahead and, if you're not doing so already, just bringing your attention more towards knowing, if that's not happening already. And even though we use a lot of words to talk about the practice, the practice itself, from moment to moment, really can be very simple. Of really just remembering this possibility of noticing or recognizing. Something in our own direct experience. It may be at times that as the days unfold, there might be this sense of settling and the sense of knowing. Might begin to feel like it includes the whole body and maybe your whole experience even of the mind, of just what's being known or how you feel. We can allow that to happen. Or if for you the sense of knowing is still helpful to connect with something that is very concrete in the body, or the hearing, And so just knowing that. So there's different ways or approaches to allowing this quality of awareness to arise, to be present. And one way would be to direct the attention towards the familiar experience, and that's okay. Just careful not to be leaning so much into the experience that we don't notice this leaning into. And another way of connecting with that sense of noticing or awareness is just lightly checking. Is there some knowing? Allowing the knowing to happen. So one of the elements of our practice that we've been speaking about is this energy of wise effort. And we can be aware of the kind of effort we're putting in. Does it feel like it's an effort that is easeful? Typically, the habits of wanting and aversion will push the effort to do more than it needs to do. Can we simply notice what's happening? And if there is this wanting, this aversion, we can notice that. It's also nature. any moment that there is awareness arising, any moment the mind is aware, really is an opportunity to learn about the present moment. You might see that each moment is new. Body breathing, changing, new moments. Even patterns that feel difficult in the body or in the heart, also changing. Just nature. Different patterns. Weather patterns moving through. This precious gift of awareness allows us the opportunity to be with whatever is happening. Whatever is happening. Is always arising out of conditions. And as long as we're not flooded or overwhelmed with the agitation isn't increasing, then we can stay with it. Right? But if the sense of struggle in our attempts to bring in wisdom or kindness isn't up to the meeting of the experience, that's when we say, maybe take a break, balance the mind. So moving the attention is moving towards something that brings a sense of ease. We can shift the body when things are too difficult or open the eyes. But if there is interest in what's happening, just a light curiosity, what is this? What's happening? Can I be with this? Is it okay to feel this when it's difficult? Or to notice the doubting mind? Just another experience that we can be aware of. It'll change. From this wise or compassionate way of looking at practice, nothing needs to happen or to stop happening. Whatever is happening, that's what we can learn from. That's what helps awareness to arise, to know that we're alive, and possibility of developing wisdom, kindness, stability. Just one moment at a time. It's the nature of life. again in these last couple of minutes. And just be stepping back, taking a bigger picture of what's happening. Maybe caught in some struggle, tension, and noticing that. Bringing some interest, curiosity, and in a moment you'll hear the sound of the bell. Just encouraging these transition moments, very easy to I'm gonna have the tendency to leave home, right, to forget to notice. And so just carrying that light touch of awareness, maybe hearing the sounds. When the eyes are ready to open, just including some awareness of seeing as well if the eyes have been closed. Thank you for your practice. Okay. So we have some time this morning, if there's any question that you'd like to ask about your practice or anything that you're noticing now in your awareness that you'd like to share, so just anything comes up.
Hey. I became aware this morning when I was eating breakfast that I was, as usual, in a conversation with somebody that wasn't even there, and relaying thoughts, and I became aware that this entity, this person that I was talking to, was totally self-generated. It was almost like I was sending thoughts out. They were boomeranging back at me because the person wasn't there. It was a created, whatever, consciousness created a entity that I could bounce off of, kind of I felt what I was doing was very much selfing. It was generating thoughts, bouncing them off this other entity that I had also created to see if they were valid, that this energy out here somehow was contrary to this energy here, because otherwise there would be no reason to go back and forth. And the whole idea of speaking, that's where my mind works, thoughts. And sometimes I have to ask myself, when I hear that inner voice, am I speaking or am I listening? Because obviously for me to say those words, I would have had to have the thought first. So I guess what happens is a thought arises and the whole thing is like a mulling. To put it into a language, if I spoke French, I would have to put it into French words or English words. So there's something going on there. So I guess what I'm saying is, when I come on retreat, for me, it's like maybe going on the Autobahn where there's no speed limit. You know, I get this space and time to explore. And I guess awareness is just another word for consciousness, which seems to be like the last frontier of science right now. No one can be of any help in the scientific realm. You're on your own here.
So I'll go ahead and
it's a lot. I don't know if I have a question. Yeah. I'm just
great. Great. Could you hear some of that in the back? Most of it. Anyone not here? So it sounds like, yeah, seems like you're able to hear. Great. So the sharing of, you know, this kind of talking to someone that's not actually there. And I'm just curious, have you talked to anyone that's not here? So one of the descriptions the Buddha gave for the mind, the way he described it, he said, it's that which is strange or weird. It's like the mind, we look at, really look deeply into the mind or consciousness. It's, wow, what is it? I mean, the worlds that we create in our dreams, the dream worlds, right? Mind creates a lot. And I'd say, what was that quote from Mark Twain? Like, most of the worst things that ever happened to him in his life never happened. Something like that. Like, you know, the catastrophizing and all of the stuff that is generated right through a moment. I mean, it's rare that we are actually in the present moment dealing with what is here and now as it happens. So we tend to be experiencing the world through all of our associations and memories and things that might happen in the past. Some of that is very useful to be able to plan and to be able to understand this world. But if we don't understand the difference between what the mind creates, all the concepts, and direct experience, so often the conceptual world is actually the world that we tend to be more consumed by. And we're not able to actually be in the reality of the immediate experiences, which is where we'll gain the insights from the nature of experience, to be able to really understand what this moment-to-moment experience is really like. So when you're observing that, just to be aware, this is the nature of the mind. It creates images, it can have, you know, I'm here and then I'm talking to someone and they're both generated by the mind and the dreams, we create a whole world, different kinds of worlds and populated by beings, and all of it is generated by the mind. So we think of how powerful the mind is in dreams. It's doing the same thing when we're awake. We dream realities constantly into stories and, you know, for, I don't know if you have any ideas about your fellow yogis here. You might have had a few thoughts about the people that you're seeing around you and you think you know them really well. And what's amazing, in the silence, we create so much certainty. So much so that you might even have gotten married already and have, you know, some life with them. Or, you know, it's like we create all these ideas and stories and then we start talking. Or someone that you think, I'll never get along with them. And then we start talking, let's say, at the end. And it's like, oh my gosh, our ideas have no... Yeah, I mean, sometimes a little bit, but we create so much in our minds, and most of it we don't see. This is why, slowly, as we include more and more in letting the awareness, you know, we start with some things that feel settling, like the body and the breath. But then if we notice the mind saying something, so often it's easy to feel like I've got to come back, rather than recognizing, oh, the awareness is noticing that too. And it's noticing, right, the energies that we call these of the hindrances, like it's noticing the doubt or the ruminating mind, the thoughts we're starting to become aware of more. But if we don't allow that maturing of the awareness to happen, we always limit. We come back to something that feels safe, which is fine to do. But also we can recognize this quality of awareness can include every part of our moment-to-moment experience slowly as we allow that to happen, right? Just including more. And so when we start to notice the mind and everything that the mind produces, all the kind of worries and stories, and it becomes very interesting. A little disappointing, but very interesting.
One lifetime is going to be nearly enough.
Maybe. Let's see. Yeah. Attitude, wise attitude can be related to this term yonaso manisikara, wise attention. How we pay attention, so wise attention would be similar to what feels like the attitude of the heart mind that is allowing things to be as they are. So if I were to look specifically for a term, that would be what I would use, wise attention. I like the phrase in the mindfulness teachings the Buddha gave in the description of how to be mindful, describing a mind that is free from desires and discontent with regard to the world. So that phrase, free from desires and discontent. Now, desires and discontent are naturally going to happen, but then we can observe and allow that desire and discontent to be the next thing that we know. And that's why the constant arising of awareness and allowing what is here is where our practice happens. And it can sound a little confusing at first. Well, if I'm just allowing everything to be there, then aren't I going to be practicing with these habits of mind that, well, we're allowing what arises, but how we meet it, that is our practice. How we meet what arises. And that's why it's always being refreshed and new, because we always have a chance to meet this moment with awareness, right, with kindness. Does that give some enough or? Mm-hmm.
Yes. I guess it's our hindrances the same thing or is it different?
I see. In relation to attitude? Yeah, so the attitude could be when it's unwise, unskillful attitude and it's not noticed, that's when we struggle in our practice. Let's say anytime you notice some struggle and you look, there will be some form of resisting, not liking, or holding on. Also, we could say the being identified with what's happening is an attitude as well. So we're taking it more personally than what it actually is. So yes, those hindrances are often the attitude that we do find, and then bringing in the wise attitude is the attitude that we're cultivating. And over time, this way of relating to experiences of whatever's happening in that sense of the heart's open and receiving, that becomes like riding the bike where you're just allowing experiences to happen. It may be unpleasant, it may be difficult, but we know enough now to observe, to allow. And even then, these attitudes come in. Okay? Great. Yeah. We'll just have to pause after this one, I think. Yeah, go ahead.
Because it's, it feels like it's a very natural, embodied response to injustice or misunderstanding, and can so easily, when with awareness and the skill, lead to connection, lead to conversation. And so here's something that I've started doing, and I'm just curious what you think about this. I'm not saying I won't do it if you say I shouldn't do it. I'm really letting them into my body, and to sometimes they give me strength and energy, and I feel like the experience of just turning them, seeing them as an object and noticing them.
Right. I mean, this is the challenge of words, because when we say, when we say anger or aversion, how that lands in us and what that means in terms of our own experience and our own history and everything else. So, I mean, this is the beautiful thing about the Dharma, is that it's really an exploration. And we'll see if what we mean by anger is a clear discernment that some things in the world are causing suffering, and that discernment brings us energy to act to stop that action. We can call that anger. Okay. But if the anger reveals to us something that then burns the mind and heart, that wants to then hurt and create more suffering, and this is where the Buddha describes that the fires of anger, and this is his way of describing it, so this is why words are difficult, but those fires then keep burning because of the kind of confusion and narrowing, right, and the othering that then happens. But that's the kind of, we would then say, we'd call that, right, kilesa, a defilement, right, something that is causing suffering for others and for oneself. And that lawfulness, we see that when we look at that, we see, oh, that is the source. Whatever word we put on it, we would see, oh, that part is not helpful. The part that can see and discerns what causes suffering and that then generates the compassion to help bring that suffering to an end out of care and love, that part, whatever word you want to put on it, That's the beautiful aspect of the heart mind, the potential, right, for wise action, compassionate action. And that can be motivated by a lot of energy. But it's the energy to bring about the good, right? Not to have retribution, not to harm, because that's where it just keeps getting generated. And yes, there has been a lot of, you know, different ways of suppressing our clarity and our deep knowing and our agency and our autonomy to take care of ourselves. And there is that. And so we need to know. Right, and that's where a lot of that energy can feel sometimes suppressed, but also then open to and go, oh, I do know what is good and I do know what I need. Right, and empowering ourselves to know. And this is what I always loved with Utejaniya, is that rather than trying to get people to follow him, he was more like trying to get their wisdom and their strength to know for themselves. And he had rather have a monastery that was empty of students because he had told them what to do and now they go away. But instead, which is often happens, if you tell, you know, students go away, then they keep coming more. So he's like, go, you know how to practice now. And then they keep coming back to pester him. So, yeah, thank you for that. Thanks for the question. Okay, so just a reminder that for the groups, we're back to the first round. So if you had groups on that first day, you'll be with another teacher today. We start in about 10 minutes. Did anyone explore being aware of seeing yesterday? You people? Are you aware of seeing right now? And if you don't think you're aware of seeing, please be honest. Can you be honest and say, I don't think I'm aware of seeing, since we're all sighted here, but do you feel like you have some knowing that you're seeing right now? If you're not sure, you can close your eyes. Let's all close our eyes for a second. Or invite you to, and then allowing the eyes to open. Just recognizing, very lightly seeing. We tend to get so pulled into what we're seeing that we forget just very simply, seeing is happening. Same. Hearing is happening. We forget to notice that hearing is happening. One little word, hearing, and then the awareness goes, the attention goes there. So these different sense doors, if we have them and they're working, are a big part of our moment-to-moment experience. And if we develop the habit of including them, we have a lot of opportunity for continuity of awareness. So many moments right in our life, particularly when we go back out of this retreat. So just a little encouragement. If you're tired, if you get that becomes stressful, and I tried a lot to like catch the seeing as if I was going to catch something, and then I'd create tension. So I want to save you that headache. Don't do that. It's very light. It's just a very light reminder. The seeing happening. See if that brings something. Okay. So see you all around. Wishing you a good day. Mm.